accession number 28674, Mr. Richard Corsbrook, Reel 9. Now, anything else about this quite interesting posting you had? I mean, you were there for a year, weren't you, from June 46 to May 47. It's a long, you know. Anything else about that posting?
No, I mean, I can remember testing the batteries. I can remember the single sideband teleprinter, the radio teleprinter trials. I can remember the single sideband swab transmitter trials. I mean, I don't remember clearly any large project that we handled, but we were up there and we were sort of private, almost a sort of test lab for the signals. I don't remember doing anything else, but we were up there and were a sort of little slightly off to one side technical arm.
Now, so were you...
Then I was demobbed, so I mean that
was... When were you demobilised then?
Hmm?
You demobilised in May 47?
I'm going to say May, it could have been June, but everything happens in May, so we'll say it's May, June 47.
Now, what happens with the demobilisation? There's no question about you staying
well,
on, is it?
Well, I could go at great length about my dissatisfaction with demobilisation,
yes,
and maybe I will in a minute. All you do is your number comes up, much as your number came up for leave from abroad, and you are said, right, oh, they say, the first thing they say is, well, look, we're having to let you go. You are to be released. Your replacement, another captain, is going to turn up on such and such a day. You therefore go for demob. And your name goes into the machine, and you are required to report to a demob centre. And you plough through the demob centre, and I can't remember the clerical detail. You certainly obviously have to do your paperwork. Along the line, you get a post office book with some gratuity money in it. And you do this whether you're an officer or a ordinary bloke. You pick up into a centre, pick up your demob kit.
What did you think of the suit?
I thought enough of it to wear it for several years. It was perfect. It was good average tailoring. It wasn't smart. It fitted.
Now, what were you unhappy about in the process?
Well, I'm going to go back now. I mean, the mechanics of demob were perfectly satisfactory, and you got your railway warrant, and you went on quite a long detachment leave. And you were allowed to wear your uniform for quite... I mean, I don't know how long it went on for. But it was quite... So, no, I had a niggle early on in the report about the way a public school... Your dad either pays for you to go to university, you either get a scholarship, or you get put into a bank or an insurance company for one reason or another. But if you don't do any of those things, you're just lost, you're cast out. My criticism for the army at the end, and if I'd known about had this if I'd known it now, I of course wouldn't be moaning, is that what advantages were available to blokes such as myself were not made abundantly clear. I'd already had one or two. I said I'd got married. Well, it's water under the bridge when you've married somebody and then she says, I can't leave my mother, effectively. Because while I was in Baghdad, before I left Baghdad, I was offered a 6 month job in Cairo, presumably the same sort of staff job, and the wife wouldn't leave home to come up. She was offered, it was offered to have your wife over in Cairo. Well, I mean, what a thing at the end of the war. No, I wouldn't. I won't go to Cairo. I can't leave mother. Okay, so one comes home. Now, for me, the obvious thing to do was to stay in the army. I'd done pretty well in the army. I knew what it was about, Nath. And there were absolute nincompoops staying on with assurances of going to the the Army College of Science down in Wiltshire somewhere, I can't remember. Anyway, going there, getting a permanent commission and then being sent to the Thrivenham. And again, sorry, I don't want you to stay in the army. I want to stay with mother. Now, you know, you do daft things when you get married. You get married for the sentiment of the moment. You don't get married for what you realise, what you don't know is going to happen. So I had to come out of the army. Point number one. To that extent, there was no... The problems there were of my own making. But what I found when I got out was that if I had taken the right steps in the army, or the right steps had been clearly pointed out, I could have gone to university, I could have gone and taken a degree somewhere, and things would have been a lot easier, a lot quicker. And it was the fact that it was a lot of stuff put on notice boards at the time when all you were interested in is getting home, you know, let's get home, let's get out of it, without really realizing, now hang on a minute, you ought to be doing this. It's to some extent the individual's fault, but there was not a lot of very clear presentation of what you could do. Because one of the things I haven't covered is that the day before I was due to go on a further course early on in 42-43, that would be the wireless course, which would have made me given me sort of complete technical authority in the signals. I was stopped because the unit I was in said he was short of officers, and I was stopped the day before. Now, if I'd gone on to the wireless course as well as the signals course, I would automatically have been qualified to join the Institute of Electrical Engineers. And that, in fact, has dogged me for a hell of a long time. So I came out of the army stupidly, without realising what I could do. Could have joined the bloody railways and joined the signalling branch of the railways. They would have trained me up less, the extra training. Could have probably joined the post office or the British Telecoms as it now is. But no, I went wandering back to the job I had, to the firm, who were bound to take me back, who all qualified. Oh, you're coming back. You can take charge of our emulsion. We just got the job for you. We want you to take charge of our emulsion making department, which was very interesting, but no great job. And that was back in the photographic business. And there's no point in carrying. No point in making a lot of that. Okay. One survived. One had a jolly good time. But one realises that you've taken no reasonable steps in your career development.
Now, how long did it take you to get back on track?
Well,
we don't do much more, but just quickly to show us how.
That job stayed. I went into there across the road, firm across. It was all convenient, but it wasn't because I didn't live here then. Across the road, worked there. They were nice people, and it was nice, easy-going, post-war sort of manufacturing, so it wasn't hard. I did, in fact, run their emulsion department. I mean, I knew enough of the chemistry to get away with it. But in the end, they came that first. They were coating film, and they had gone into quite a lot a bit. Sorry, they'd gone big on film coating, X-ray film coating, and then had got themselves into a trouble because their air conditioning plant failed, and effectively they could not get film that was free from spots and blemishes, and the firm effectively packed up. While it was packing up, friend who had worked there but had gone to work to GEC, General Electric Company, came and said, "Psh, do you want a job with GEC?" So I got a job with GEC, so I went to GEC, and experimental staff, I think. A junior engineer, because of my signals qualifications and everything else, they took me on. And lo and behold, I ended up doing very much the same job as I'd been doing in the army at the end, working on a trial in a team that was running trials. We were running trials on guided weapon systems. And that really is a good place to stop, because I did 30 years with that.
With General Electric?
With General Electric, oblique Marconi. And ended up, well, a fairly responsible engineer in GEC, Marconi.
So it hadn't held you back that long. When did you start?
Oh, no, it held me back 10 years.
When did you start at GEC?
56.
Oh, it really is 10 years.
It held me back 10 years. If I had gone into the electrical engineering trade by whatever means, well, if I hadn't been stopped going on to the advanced wireless course, I would have come out as grad IMEA. So I could then have got in more or less straight into a firm like GEC or one of the other firms and worked my way through to get full MIEA.
So you were there from 1956 to 1986, 30 years, you said.
87, yeah.
87. Now,
That's funny. 31. See, it's over. Yes, only just 87.
Now, how did how did your wartime service benefit or not benefit you, do you think, overall? Had it been a valuable bit of your life, or did
my
it mentally
particular and wartime service, which was doing the things I did during the war, which was not really what anybody else, a lot of other people, nobody did quite the same thing during the war, which was being responsible for the sort of a service or a commitment over a wide area, liaising with a number of people, immediately helped when I came into GEC. Because we were doing very much the same thing. Can we get this thing to work? Can we keep it working? What's wrong with it? What can we do about it? What can we get somebody to do something about it? And of course, if you're working for a firm like GEC, Marconi, who are all the time, my entire career was working with the Navy, not in the Navy, but working on naval equipment. You've got the right, you know, the same sort of brain processes. So in point of fact, yes, my particular army career was an absolute doddle for working for GEC. Although, I mean, let's face it, the equipment was the same, but, you know, frequencies are frequency and electronics is electronics, and it was a lot easier in those days than it is now.
Thank you very much.